3, 2, 1, go!
Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Force podcast, the podcast from Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. We are back with The Mandalorian Season 3, the premiere. We are so excited to finally talk about it, but Chapter 17, The Apostate. Before we get into it, we would like to welcome our guest for today, Molly from Star Wars Explained. We love you. Welcome back to the Triad.
Welcome back.
Hello. Thank you for having me again.
It's so great having
it's
you.
Okay. We're
so
love
very
you.
Excited. It's just like when we were planning out season, who to open up Season 3 with. It's just like, well, there was only one answer and the answer was you. So we are very, very, very excited to have you here. We're so excited for The Mandalorian. Obviously, we're a little biased because we were able to attend the premiere. So everything's...
You did. Not me, but okay.
You were there in spirit. You were there in spirit. And this might be a hot take to everyone that's listening, but like, you know, Andor premiere was better. And I'm not going to go into it why. But, you know, you can fill in the blanks if you look at all the pictures. Mandalorian season 3, it was a long time coming. We had kind of season 2.5 a little bit in Book of Boba Fett. So there's some threads there that tie with this. Before we get going into episode 1 though, Molly, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you have been with Mando in the post season 2 era? Like, were you a Luke Skywalker fan when that happened? Like, what are your thoughts? Recap it for us.
Yeah, so I loved Mandalorian the entire time it's been going on. Season 1 and 2, I thought, were some of my favorite Star Wars of all time. And so I knew we were going to have this big, long break in between Season 2, and we didn't know really when Season 3 was going to happen. But when we got Book of Boba Fett, I loved that show. You know, that show got a lot of mixed reviews from a lot of people, but
yeah,
it really like blew me away and caught me by surprise, because I was kind of like, I don't need a Boba Fett show, but just the direction that they took Boba Fett's character, and then the fact that we got so much Mandalorian and Grogu stuff in there too. I thought that was the perfect way to fill in some of the gaps so that we could start out season 3 just like start running, like go right into the story without having to explain, you know, how they got back together, what Grogu's been up to, blah blah blah. So I was really glad that we got that set up before starting the new season.
I mean, and as the world's number one Grogu fan, like, would Book of Boba Fett have worked as well if we hadn't had Din and Grogu?
I mean, it could have, but, you know, I'm never going to say no to a cameo of my little green baby to any show.
True, very true. And he is, like, in full force, especially with the cuteness factor, especially now that he has unlocked special force abilities.
Full force, yeah, no pun intended.
Let's go. We're in it. To cause even more mischief. Although, I mean, he's going full dark side, I think, with this episode, and we'll get to that in a bit. But I totally lost my train of thought. Let's just go into season 1, episode 1, season 3 of The Mandalorian. Molly, what did you think? Did it meet up to your expectations of what Mando was supposed to be doing?
Oh, it definitely did. The way that they set this season up for success was so fun. Like, there was so much world building in just this first episode, and it wasn't a super long episode too. It was only like 30-35 minutes, which you know, we saw that runtime and I was like, I wish it was kind of longer. But in that short amount of time, they showed us 3 different planets, they showed us like exactly what Din's mission is right now, they showed us, you know, what's going on Navarro. They set up a lot of stuff for the pirates. They showed us what the armorer is up to, what Bo-Katan is up to. I was like, this is perfect. This sets up everything that we are expecting to see in this season.
Yeah, it definitely felt a lot longer than it was. And I think that's a credit to Mando always, because that's something that I think even since season one, we've always discussed. Like,
they've always been able to pack in a lot of storytelling into a short amount of time. I didn't even notice that it was only, without the credits, it's only like 32 minutes runtime. And I didn't notice until I kind of rewatched it this morning. I was like, wait, but it didn't feel that short. I feel like I got a lot of bang for my buck from this episode because much happened.
That Disney's Plus subscription is worth it. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, I'm not one to diss a slow burn because those are great too, but this is already the third season. We already kind of got the prologue and the Book of Boba Fett that could have taken away half the season to figure out how they got back together. So I'm actually really enjoying that they hit the ground running and we got so much of where everybody's at right now. And I feel like since they set up so much in that one episode, they are totally going to turn the tables on us. And I am here for it completely. This is going to be a really fun ride.
Nani, but how does this first episode rank for you in all three season openers?
Well, it's going to depend because I only seen the first episode and I have hindsight over the other ones because I have the whole season. But I think my favorite entrance so far actually was the episode in the Book of Boba Fett he's in the butcher shop. That for me was like his best entrance because I didn't see it and he was so incredibly amazing in it and so completely Mandalorian, and it just completely caught me by surprise. So I thought that was his best entrance so far.
Seeing him whip out the darksaber in that scene, you're like, oh my god.
What?
Molly, how about you? What was your do you concur? Is that your same answer for Mando entrance?
I didn't get a chance to do a full rewatch of like the first two seasons, which I still plan to do. But a lot of people were saying that this first one of season three was similar to the other season premieres where you get like a big monster and some of the other setup was similar, but this one, I don't know, this one just felt different, and this one might be my favorite one. I don't know. I love the sassiness of Grogu using the Force so frivolously, which may or may not be good, but he's just like so confident in himself, just like spinning around in that chair and getting to see Nevarro and how far it's come, and Greef Karga just like in that drip, like he was living.
He had two
and
droids,
the droids
like carrying his cape.
Oh, yeah. That, I was like,
if you're talking about excesses,
I don't think that's an excess. I think if you have a cape that majestic and you are Carl Weathers, you need those droids.
He was like, there's one thing that I have to have in this season, and that is a super long cape, and it needs to not ever hit the ground.
Yes. It's like,
mission accomplished.
I'm not dry cleaning this any more than it needs to. So, I mean, king. That's all I have to say about it. I'm like, and good job to like the whole Lucasfilm team, the designers, and just like, because I hope that wasn't a Jon Favreau thing. I hope that was just like someone deciding, it's like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we just designed like a little cape droid? So, whoever you are, good job. I hope you get a race this year.
Yes.
But the intro, I had like mixed feelings about the intro. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I thought it was great. However, I think, I think it was really good because it was kind of a bait and switch thing, because when it starts, it's really epic in scope, which I actually kind of really appreciate, because it's like setting up the stakes in a subconscious way, because it's like the drums and the kids getting initiated. It's like the Mandoverse, right? It's like it's wide open as opposed to like season one and two, where it's just like very intimate to like, it's just Mando's journey type of thing. Even though season two we got my boy Cobb Vanth and the whole thing, but this season three thing is like really big, and I thought it was actually a flashback at first, so I'm just
when Mando showed up, I was like, wait, what? We're in the present.
I was just like, why is his little helmet blue? Like, he's supposed to have a little stainless steel helmet. I don't get it. Why is the visor so big? Does he have like senior sighted like me? I was confused about the whole thing, although I was in it. But then when Mando swoops in, I'm like, okay, well, here we go. So bait and switch, good job, Lucasfilm. You tricked me. But then he proceeds to have like that conversation with the armorer, which for me is just like, well, you're having kind of the same conversation from Book of Boba Fett. So I was kind of like, you're kind of having your cake and eating it too at the same time, because you already committed to continuing the story in this other show. But now you're kind of like being like, oh, well, but we kind of have to explain it. It's just like, come on. If you're committing to the one, just go on. Just go in. You expected us to watch it. So
it's like you didn't watch it in Book of Boba Fett. It's your problem. Go watch it.
Don't apologize for it. So like I felt like it was a little bit like of them being, okay, well, we got to give them something. And so that's for me, like why the intro didn't end up being as like awesome as it could be, because it's just like, okay, let's retread a little bit what we kind of already went through.
So which one's your favorite?
Mine? Oh, season one, episode one. It's boom. It's just like, it's just so, because, you know, that's Mando at the heights of his full power. You know, it's just like, it's him. I'm a bounty hunter. I'm a himbo. I have no idea what's going on. And that makes me dangerous. You know, just like, it just doors open. He shows up. And you know, it just sets the stage for the show in such a West. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wonderful. Not to say that like this intro was bad. I think they're all good. You know?
Yeah.
I just think that maybe it's nostalgia goggles, right? The way that just that season one opened was majestic. And I love that season. I mean, for me, season one of The Mandalorian is just perfect. Like, I have my issues with two. But I feel, and this is without getting into spoiler territory with episode two, I feel that season three is kind of like correcting for all the misgivings or things that we might not like about season two, but we'll have to wait and see. And that's as much as I can say about it. But
next week,
I want to talk a little bit more. Yes, Nessie. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit more about Grogu, though, since we have like the foremost expert Grogu here. We're with the answer. Oh, actually, yeah. One question before going into Grogu. Do we think that all the, in amongst the Ancelans, Babu Frick was there? Because I'm not sure there's a consensus. I've heard everyone saying like, "Oh, that's Babu Frick," and I was like, "Those are Ancelans. Nowhere does it say that it's Babu Frick."
I don't know. I don't think that any of those are meant to be Babu Frick. But I have seen a lot of people online, and it's fine. Like I don't expect the casual viewer to know that they are called Ancelans. They're just like, look at all the Babu Fricks, and which is funny.
Good point. Okay.
Yeah.
I accept. Just like Baby Yoda is not the thing that we're calling the thing because we don't know otherwise. Yeah.
Which I do love that Mando immediately clarifies. Like when Greef Karga calls him your kid or something again, he's like, Grogu, what? That's his name.
And I like Grogu. And I like Carl Weathers' response. It's just like, if you say so.
Yeah, whatever.
Just like such... If you say so.
He's like a king. I love that. Anyway, going back to the Ancelans, Molly, how did you feel about Grogu, you know, choking out a bitch in that scene and like, you know, going full dark mode on that?
I don't know that he was trying to hurt it. I think he just, he is like us when and if we saw him in real life, we were like, I got to pick this thing up and squeeze it and hug it and love it. So I think he had the same reaction.
It was cute aggression. He saw something smaller than himself and he wanted to shake it. That's a thing. Yes. I read an article about it once. Cute aggression is a thing. And that whole scene, though, is so awesome because then you have like Mando crouched up in the little hut trying to talk to the Ancelans, and then Carl Weathers. I don't know why I keep calling him Carl Weathers. Greef Karga translating. It was
and kind of from just kneeling from the outside, like coming in at the same time that kind of Mando's starting to get it. It's like, I don't need your translation, but he's still doing it anyway.
But I love how sassy that was. It was just so star. It's like, I got it. I was perfect delivery. No notes.
And he kept going though. King. It's like, I'm gonna translate anyway.
I loved the reveal of what the whole inside of that place looked like and seeing Mando just sitting cross-legged in there, kind of like hunched over, like.
Yeah. I do feel we need an extra
set design for it was so cool, honestly. Oh yeah, like crawling in.
But that scene comes after like a little reintroduction to a character that we did not expect was going to come back in any capacity, and that is kind of IG-11. And I don't think anyone expected, you know, Mando specifically to want to revive that droid for any reason whatsoever. And then we have like that really poignant scene, I think, in Greef Karga's office where they're trying to revive him, and then it defaults to its original programming and goes full zombie, trying to attack our sweet, sweet child. So bad on you, IG-11. although we did get like a wonderful one-liner from Pedro Pascal there, with the like, oh, that's one way to use your head or something. Something.
Yes.
Akin to that, like, very on the nose.
When grief but comes. It was dad so funny. Jokes.
I know. Jokes.
Which for me, like, this episode is perfect because it kind of encapsulates everything George Lucas about the original prequels and original films. Because it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's serious. There's great action, but it's also campy sometimes. There's dad jokes. It's just like everything.
Yeah.
Specific about Star Wars is just encapsulated in like this one yeah. episode.
And Din is going full dad mode now. It's so yeah. great to watch because he was so much in denial about it for the longest time. Like, it has been evolving from day one, but now he's just full on dad, instinctually grabbing Grogu the moment that he's in danger, like letting him cuddle up when he's kind of sleepy, like scared. And it's so, so good. But
when
yeah,
he threw him to grief. I yeah. was like, oh my
right. god. Right. Like, out of danger, go catch.
It's like so I know we don't know for a fact if Grief is a father. I mean, maybe he's an uncle or something, but I like how Grief just like catches Grogu.
Yeah.
Like, baby.
No hesitation.
Yeah. 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 It was like very football. He was like, yeah, quarterback. I don't know anything about football. So I just threw a quarterback there. I don't know what the hell that means. But there's a ball and someone caught it. Grogu was the ball, and Grief Karga got it. So that was hilarious. But Molly, what did you think of IG-11's quasi-resurrection, and what do you think that might mean for the future of the character? So is Taika back?
Yeah, I was surprised by that. Like, I know we got a couple of shots of the statue in the trailers and stuff, but I was not expecting some of that statue to actually be his actual parts and for him to think that, like, yeah, we can fix that. I was like, oh, okay. But I like what it, you know, represents, because for Din to have seen IG-11 go from a killing machine, the bounty hunter killing machine, to this like nursing droid, and to see him literally be reprogrammed. Like, I think he sees that, and he's like, okay, I know even droids can change. So I feel like he kind of like relates to that really closely. Like, okay, I can change if this droid can change. And like, there's literally the line of like, oh yeah, he went back to his original programming, which is like, okay, Din, that's what you did when Grogu was gone. You went back to bounty hunting.
And he's still, to an extent, right? He's still in that default programming because he needs to atone and be the apostate.
And have the reaffirmation of,
So Din has a lot of...
instead of, like, growing from that. Yeah, he's still in a lot of those transition places.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think he sees a parallel with the IG-11. It's like, not only was there that transition into the nursing droid, but there was also, like, the self-sacrifice saved everybody. And if there's a droid that I can trust in my mission going forward, it is this droid. But yeah, I was really surprised, especially because we had seen the statue in season 2. So I didn't think there was going to be anything important about it in season 3. And then as soon as we get to see the statue close up, with IG-11 is like standing on the helmets of like destroyed troopers, which was so great. And IG-11 was really one of my favorite characters from season one.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really excited to see this journey with them together now, kind of from scratch, trying to figure out how they help each other and how they grow from that, and how all of that has to do with Grogu as well, because their vision of life changed because of the relationship with Grogu.
Right.
So it's going to be great to see how that continues to happen.
Pero, yeah. I have to say, I do have like one qualm with how it happened, and this is against Mando. He didn't want to like get his bro back just because he wanted a bestie. It's like he's just getting him back because he needs something from him.
I need like, a mission, man. Partner.
Hey, man, come on. Do he's it. Like, do it I miss our
talks, our late night talks. Right. He's like, no, I know that thing can take care of Grogu, and he's the only droid that's seen me with my helmet off, so I need to go back to that.
Right, right.
I can't take out my helmet around him without breaking my oath.
I mean, we have to admit, self-serving. Din is still not the most emotionally available man. No. So, you know, he's not very cognizant of his feelings. So we can let that slide.
Yeah.
Which is a testament to Pedro Pascal's wonderful acting, because if there's an emotionally available man and like, you know, in tune with his emotions, it is Pedro Pascal.
It's Pedro.
So the fact that he always plays these characters that are so, you know, grumpy and
grumpy, and stuffy.
Give that man a Golden Globe or whatever award fits TV categories. I don't know what they're called. So IG-11, you know, like in the process of coming back, we don't know if we'll see him, but it seems like that's gonna, you know, be a to use the term used with the show, a fetch quest that might happen. On our way, though, I wanted to say something that was something incredible that happened in the movie theater, and I wanted to see if you guys' reaction was as incredible as it was for me. We're in hyperspace. We're sleeping, you know, we're going, everything's great. Matt, our himbos, is taking a nap because he doesn't know when to, you know, be looking out the window at the correct time.
He's on autopilot.
And in that one second before, I felt it was very kind of Willy Wonka, and he's just like staring along, and I was like, oh, look, a Willy Wonka moment. And then suddenly, what do we get?
And then what do we get? All of a sudden, we see not James Cameron's space whales. We get Dave Filoni's space whales. We got some burgers off his house, which
I was not expecting that.
The thing that I was thinking about,
I was blown away.
What I was thinking about when it happened was we were at the theater and everyone starts cheering, and in the back of my mind, I'm just like, Dave Filoni must be patting himself on the back. He must be like, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was like, I imagine him like expecting that moment, seeing, let's see if they know what this is, and then everyone cheers, and he's like, okay. I got it. I still got it. I'm the man. So I was not expecting Purgles. That blew my goddamn mind. Like, this episode could have just been like Mando doing dad jokes with Grief Karga for 20 minutes, and I still would have loved it. But, you know, it would have been like whatever episode. But then the inclusion of the Purgles just made it something else entirely, because at least for me, it opens the doors of the amount of weirdness that we might see in this show, or at the most definite in Ahsoka. Molly, tell us how you felt when you saw Purgles and what you think that might mean for the future.
I was kind of in the same boat. I was not expecting to see something like that. I was just like, oh, Grogu's being cute. You know, he's just looking out into space, having a good time. And then you see the shadows of the Purgle, and I was just like, oh my God, they're doing this. Like, they're getting into that weird stuff. Mm-hmm, and immediately I was like, this is some really good essential setup for Ahsoka. You know, I don't know if we'll see them be a part of Mando season 3. It would be cool if they were, but it's definitely something that we're going to need to see and know about for Ahsoka. So I'm psyched that they're already bringing some of that stuff into this show.
Nani, what did you
think? I was so excited.
Was it emotional for you as well?
It was huge. Like I said, when I was watching the scene, I was like, oh, and this like Willy Wonka, like, oh, he's just
world of pure imagination.
Yeah. And then Husbando was actually just kind of laying back because he was tired from work. And then suddenly he sits up and I sit up and we're like, Purgles. Oh my God. What the hell? There's Purgles? What? And
I love the voice change. Everyone's like, oh, Mandalorians. Yeah. Purgles!
Yeah. Purgles!
That's the most and I remember thing,
we've talked about things that we know for sure are never going to show up in a live action show. And one of the things that was top of the list was Purgles. We're never going to see them. And then, fine, we only got the silhouette, but they looked amazing. And if they showed us that, and we know that Ezra is going to be in Ahsoka, it just, oh my God, I'm just so excited to see how many other of the amazing creatures that we know from the Clone Wars and Rebels and everything else are going to show up, because I think Star Wars excels when it's weird. Like, all of its angles, like Andor's fantastic because it's boots to the ground. It's very realistic. It's very close to everybody's heart. You can really feel like you're there. But then when it's really weird and there's a lot of magic and there's all this imagination, it excels as well. So I love both sides of that. And to maybe get a hint of it here and then in Ahsoka, I think is Star Wars going in a really, really good direction.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm really excited.
I think so.
But my mind was just racing about,
I couldn't believe it.
How I was like, okay, well, how could they bring these into Mando and like make them relevant for this show? Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe Grogu senses their force connection and maybe like their navigation system breaks down and Grogu has to like use the Purgil to like get somewhere. I was just
oh my god.
That's it. That's it. I mean, it makes sense.
I mean, kind of makes sense. Yeah.
Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Right.
And Mando was trying to teach Grogu about how navigation. To fly and navigate and everything. And you could tell Grogu was so kind of afraid of them at first. That's why he kind of cuddles in with locked in because he's like, wait, there's a lot of them. And he probably sensed that they're really that in with sense. The Force, and he's so new to the Force. So, woo.
I mean, and that 100% makes sense. And then if you tie it into the Thrawn novels with the Skywalkers and the Sith Ascendancy that like navigated through the Force, oh my God, mind blown. Okay, it's gonna happen.
Yes,
we're gonna get a scene of Grogu riding a Purrgil. You heard it here. You heard it here first, folks. Grogu's gonna ride a Purrgil.
Hey, if Ezra can do it, so can Grogu.
Oh yeah.
True. Well, he just needs like a little baby, little harness thing so he can ride and not fall.
We saw Grogu have that moment with the Rancor. You know, he's got a special connection with creatures. Yes. So I could see something like that happen.
Oh my God. Now, if it doesn't happen, Mando sucks and Disney Star Wars sucks and cancel everything and shut it down.
Right.
But before we get into that, there was another creature that I want to confirm if you guys thought it was the same thing that I thought it was. Right before Mando and Grief go to IG-11 statue, there's a little bird that like really quickly flies off of a IG-11. It's kind of a blink and you'll miss it type of thing. But when I saw him, he was like, Convor? Is that a Convor? Yeah. Are we getting like more ties into Ahsoka?
It definitely is.
It definitely. Okay. Confirmed.
Confirmed. Done. Okay. Next. And Grogu's going to mount it too. And he's going to fly on top of a combo, even though they're probably the same size.
They're about the same size. Yeah.
Actually, it'd be cuter if they're both flying on the Purrgil together, side by side.
Oh.
Like holding the little, birds don't have hands, but maybe with this little. Pigeon feet.
Yeah.
So Convor. Okay. So we got Convor and Purrgil. So Ahsoka confirmed basically in season 3.
I mean, even if we don't see Ahsoka, which I think we probably will, I just love that. Yeah, we're getting all these little like nuggets of stuff for things to come. You know, we kind of saw the Convor. I think we did see the Convor in her Mando episode. Like in the forest, but it wasn't as clear as what we saw here.
Yeah.
So I love these little drops of like, oh, interesting.
Yeah. I think season 2 was kind of a testing ground for a lot of those things to see like, well, let's see if, you know, if the
I know what they could get away with.
Yeah, if the normies react well to, and I say normies lovingly.
The casuals, yeah.
It's all, you know, you do you, boo. Enjoy things however you want to enjoy them. But like everyone that doesn't know the, because you know most people just watch the live action stuff. They don't watch the animation things. So I think that season 2 is kind of like a testing ground to see like what animation stuff would kind of work. And clearly, I think the result was just like we can do whatever we want. And season 3 is basically like let's pull the trigger. It's gonna just like go as crazy as we can go. Because season 2, every little thing has kind of had a good effect on fandom. Mm-hmm. So season 3, I have no idea what we're going to see because these 2 episodes have been like, oh, well, okay. So I have no idea what to expect in the coming episodes. But before we wrap up, we have Plant Space Pirate King, which... Like, I never thought I would say that sentence. Holly, what did you think of the whole dogfight and which culminates with Plant Space Pirate King? What did you think of all that?
Well, first of all, I was psyched to see like a space dogfight like this in this episode. Cause like I said, we are seeing so much world building that I was like, oh my God, we're getting a space fight too. That's awesome. And I love.
And it was a good one.
It was so good, like weaving in and out of the asteroids. And I love pirates and just about anything, but specifically space pirates in Star Wars is just, it's so pulpy, you know, and it was just so much fun to see. And yeah, you get that shot of the green, like swamp thing, captain pirate guy. And you're like, who is that? What species is that? What? And it looked amazing. And he even said avast, which like perfect. Perfect. That is no notes.
No, I thought the character design was great. I saw him and like all the algae and stuff like moving around as he spoke. It was so good. He was just missing the parrot and I'm done.
Maybe he has the parrot for when he shows up inevitably on another episode because this cannot be the last time we see
that's not the end.
Space Plant Pirate King. because it's too good. They spent too much money on that whole thing to be a one and done thing. And the visuals just looks amazing. Like the space fight, the dog fight was just like incredible. Like you can tell the VFX budget for this season was like, okay, this is the biggest show in the world. Spare no expense. Let's go. Which is, I think, another credit to this first episode. It shows like how much I think the technology has gone from season one, because I feel, at least for me, one of the shortcomings of season two was that you could feel when it was volume, because it was, you know, volumey. It was like the one.
It felt a little bit more like constrained. This one feels large, like the world feels large. So.
Completely large, and like not just like. Yeah. Lars is actually like visually stunning. It's just like as good as any film, particularly Marvel films. So it's just like incredible. I'd say that with love too. I love Marvel films. I haven't seen Quantumania, but
yeah, definitely after seeing shows like Book of Boba Fett and especially Obi-Wan Kenobi, the visuals in this show are just like top notch. Like I definitely noticed it in the space fight, but especially too on Nevarro, just. It didn't look like they were walking through a set with, you know, inside the volume. It looked like they were in that city, which I loved. So, yeah, just all the visuals in just this first episode was like, okay, yeah, they're not messing around.
No.
And we can't even stop there. Bo-Katan's castle.
Kalevala.
Because that's the thing. After the dog fight, I thought that was it. Yeah. Episode but done.
That was it. Yeah.
But we got the post credit scene before the credits. So yeah, Nani, what did you think of everything with Boba?
I thought it was kind of crazy because it looks so reminiscent of Mandalore in the Clone Wars. So you know the set design was all there. It was so nostalgic. It was perfectly done, and then it's just empty. It's just full desolation. And then obviously, you know, Bo-Katan looks like a badass, just kind of leaning on her massive throne. Yeah. But it is Bo-Katan alone. And she was this one person, like, no matter what happened, she, like, kept, like, picking herself up, kept the fight going. And this time we just saw her completely losing all hope. And it was, like, really hard to watch. I mean, I'm hoping that Din's gonna show up, you know, after he figures out that Mandalore isn't actually cursed or poison, and we're gonna get Bo-Katan back as an ally. But it was really, really hard to watch her be so dispirited, and Mando be the one that, you know, kind of tries to, why are you like this? Didn't you say that you wanted to help Mandalore? What are you
therapist.
Doing? So I thought that was actually a really great way to end the episode, with them kind of like switching positions as opposed to like the first time that we met Bo-Katan. But that's my opinion.
Which I think is a credit to why I was surprised with episodes one and two in terms of like how they're structuring the episode slash the season. Because from what we've come to expect, right, we kind of expect like, well, it's the fetch quest. So this episode finishes when whatever arc in the planet finishes. But the fact that, we went so many places, and then like at the end we see Bo-Katan so fast, it's just like, oh, so we're
was not expecting
This is full steam ahead. There's no, we're not wasting time on this show. So
yeah.
Molly, what
and
do you think?
And her wig
of
is way
Bo-Katan?
Better.
Oh, the wig.
The wig is better.
Girl, yes, that wig. Let's bash season two a little bit. That wig, no bueno. I was just like, come on, that's some Game of Thrones badness on the wig department. I was like, no, thank you. I don't know anything about wigs, but I was just like, girl, just do something.
We went from Party City wig to like.
Yes.
Lace front, like way better wig.
It was the creme de la creme of wigs, because it's amazing. Molly, what did you think of that whole Bo-Katan sequence?
I was so psyched. I never thought we would see Kalevala in live action, and to get that name drop, you're just like, oh, like if you know the deep lore, you're like, yes, this is so cool. And then to see Bo-Katan there just alone, we've kind of all been there, right? We've all been like, all right, I'm depressed. I'm on the couch. I'm just chilling. Yep. But it was crazy to see, you know, at the very beginning of the episode, we see the armorer and the Children of the Watch type Mandalorians thriving, bringing in new members that are, you know, children. And then we see Bo-Katan alone. It's crazy to see that power shift of like, she was like, in charge, and she had people with her, and she was on a mission, And now those people have left her. And that's really, you know, it's sad to see. And I loved her line about, like, if you have the Darksaber and you wave it around, yeah, they'll follow you.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's crazy to see.
Dejected, right? Yeah.
The fact that they're, you know, they're being really picky and choosy on which parts of tradition they're going to support and which parts they're like, you know, saying, oh, you're one of those that keep your helmets on, like, boo.
Right.
But then they're loyal to this Darksaber. So it's interesting to see, like, what are these people actually about? Like, what are they actually choosing to follow as far as tradition goes? And so, yeah, I felt bad for poor Bo. I was like, I hope she has, like, a TV or something in that room. Like, is she just sitting there?
She's just sitting there by herself.
Hopefully
with
she
the
got
one
a
droid that we saw.
Disney you know? Plus subscription. Yeah,
she's got she's binge watching something.
She's and not something happy. She's, you know, watching some cold case thing on Netflix, and she's going through it.
Something really depressive.
But I think that's interesting, and like how you said it, Molly, because I think that dissonance on how Mandalorians are choosing what to believe in is obviously manifested within Din himself, because I thought it was weird, like, when he comes up to her, and obviously his mission right now is to cleanse himself in the waters of the mines, blah 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 blah, right? Like all that mumbo jumbo. But then when he comes into Bo's castle, he's just like, "Oh, I come here to join you." He's like, well, "My dude, like, what's happening? Like, are you doing the one?" It's like, are you like a double agent? Are you like playing both sides to like do the thing? But it's just like, for me, that kind of manifested in a way his confusion about what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, you know, like the whole mask helmet thing, I don't believe it, but maybe this thing is the right thing. So everyone's confused. No one knows what's happening. And I think that is a beautiful thing. I think the only person that actually knows what's happening is Grogu, but he can't speak. Although we did see him try to say a couple things.
He's making some, like, different sounds. Yeah. So, like, not necessarily words yet, but he might be getting there.
Do we think that's
how awesome that you can see the Beskar chainmail, like, underneath the robe?
Yeah. So
I love that.
The only issue that I have with that is that it's going to pay off. So we're going to see that some things, they have to do it. And it's going to break my heart, even though I know he's going to make it. But I mean, you'll be fine.
He'll be fine.
He's a
They would never hurt willingly. Him too much.
Just enough to hurt us. Exactly. but yeah, like if episode one was a sample of what's to come for the rest of the season, color me intrigued, because this, you know, it was a lot, but in all the best ways. We could be talking about this for days on end, but at some point we have to put a pin in it until the next week. But before we wrap up, I know we can't do responsible speculation about episode two, because
you two watched it already.
Because we know what's going to happen. So let's do responsible speculation about the season, trying to omit what we know from episode two, if that's even possible. So
I think I can handle that.
Okay, go.
Well, the one thing that I've had on my mind for a while is, like, the idea of the Darksaber. And we saw in the last season, you know, Din has it, but he's struggling with it. You know, it's heavy. Mm-hmm. It's he's literally heavy with burdens, so he can't use it that well. And then Bo thinks that if she can get it back, you know, she'll be the leader that she needs to be. I have this, like, idea in my head of, even though I love the Darksaber, I feel like it's going to get destroyed somehow. And, like, by doing that, it will kind of, like, break down the wall of, like, we have to stay true to this tradition, and whoever holds the Darksaber is the leader. So I don't know, maybe it gets destroyed, or maybe, like, it gets melted down into something else. I don't know, but I feel like something's got to happen. Something's got to change with all these Mandalorians thinking, you know, we have to stick to these old ways in order to survive and rebuild.
Great. Nani, what do you think?
Yeah. Like, piggybacking back on that, because the problem I think with them is not just the Darksaber, is the fact that they've they can't even agree on what their actual traditions are. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're so fractured that they can't mm-hmm. really, they can't recognize a real leader who was Bo-Katan. They can't recognize, you know, that the Watch has become a cult. Did you see how young those kids were that were swearing to never remove that helmet for the rest of their lives? I mean, that's
traumatic. And he had long hair, so it's going to get steamy in there. Yeah.
You can't breathe in there. I saw it go and like the hair was still sticking. I was like, ugh, so sweaty in there. Terrible. So I think Mandalore's big problem is, one, obviously they got their home completely destroyed. They don't know what's fact and what's myth, because even Bo-Katan said there's nothing sacred about the waters. Like, that's where we got our ore, and then it was mystified into this thing. So they need to somehow get together and just destroy all of that myth and realize that the important is in them as a people, in them sticking together and then fighting for their home, and not just blindly follow a guy waving around a darksaber, which, you know, goes to show that Bo-Katan herself has lost faith in the darksaber and what it means. So I hope it goes along those lines. And then obviously the relationships are the best part of any Star Wars show, really, and we've seen how those evolve. So I really enjoy watching how Grogu and him go together now with IG-11 being thrown into the mix and everybody else. So I'm just looking forward to all of that,
except one person, and I'm glad that they just like waved that person off. I was like, what about, you know, so-and-so? Never mind her. She's just on a show that's not happening. Yep. Don't worry
about it. Special forces, blah, blah, blah.
She's on a show that's canceled. Don't worry about it. I loved it.
Like, we didn't leave the plot hole because here, explanation, here it is. Done.
Like, you're not very important. Concise. And I like that.
I like that you brought up the relationship aspect of it, because I had this idea. I had this thought yesterday. I was like, do you think Grogu understands why Din is on this mission? Like, Din revealed his face to Grogu specifically, and now has to put the helmet back on and go atone for doing that. So I'm like, does Grogu feel any shade from that? Like, that makes me so sad to think about, that Grogu knows that Din is on this mission to atone for his mistakes, and that mistake was having that emotional connection in that moment with him. Yeah. I was
that breaks my heart to think about it that way.
That's deep. Holy crap. I'm going to wonder about that all day now.
But I don't think, Grogu would have chosen to go back if he was feeling guilty about it. Maybe one of the reasons he went back is because he sees that he could have committed to Luke as well, but that he had that emotional connection with Din and kind of went back to show Din that it's worth it to have that emotional connection. So
yeah,
I don't know. And then maybe through his actions show him it's not wrong to take off your helmet. It's okay for me to hug you, Dad.
Yeah.
I'm hoping this is where we're leaning, because them having that family, I think, is one of the most important things, and how they help each other be better.
Yeah, no, I think Grogu has like a lot more emotional maturity than Din. So I don't think he feels shame. I don't think he feels shame. I feel that he's just giving Din the space he needs to figure it out.
Yeah, and he's like, I know my dad needs to go on this mission.
Yeah, he needs some time. It's not me, it's him. I'll be here when he's ready.
Yeah,
baby arms ready to do a little mini hug. But those hugs, those little mini hugs, are the biggest ones in the galaxy. Especially when he's riding on his Purrgil, and Dad's just like, "That's my son. I'm so proud." Oh my god, I cannot tear it up thinking about that. Jesus Christ. Anyway, I'm getting crazy here. This has been like incredible. Like, if this is only the first episode, and there's so much to dig into, I can't even wait to. I mean, I already don't have to wait for episode 2, but for the rest of the season,
to wait too.
I can tell you after we've finished recording.
We are going to be just like on the cusp of bursting until the next one comes out, because it just blows the season wide open.
So that's not an understatement. episode 3, since you already know what happens in episodes 2. You guys might be blowing up anytime soon.
That's true.
It's the price we pay. But anyway, Molly, thank you so much for joining us. Like I said, we're going to have thought of a better person to kick off this review series with. It's an incredible conversation. I know you guys are very busy. Obviously, we still have the Bad Batch going. So why don't you tell everybody? I mean, I know everyone knows where to find you, but why don't you tell everybody like what's happening over at Star Wars Explained?
Yeah, thank you guys so much for thinking of me for this. Yeah, we're over on Star Wars Explained. We are covering Mandalorian on Wednesdays, and then Bad Batch is going to be on Thursdays. So we're actually going to do a live stream. We're combining our Bad Batch coverage with our Lego live streams on Thursdays. So
that's, yeah, it's a lot of work.
I think there's what, 5 weeks where they're both on together.
A lot.
So we'll be busy, but plus, it's going to be fun.
What's it called?
Yeah, plus Jedi Survivor. There's nothing wrong with too much Star Wars. There's nothing wrong with that.
That's true.
A good problem to have.
We're like in the opposite spectrum right now of like where we were between a prequel and sequel trilogy, where there was
nothing. Where there's nothing.
So so I'll take it. So
we knew March was going to be crazy. We're having our own little March Madness without having to know about the sports. So it's great.
It is. And then April, we all get to hang out together at Star Wars Celebration. So
I can't wait.
It's wonderful. I haven't bought my tickets. I'm unhinged. It's like I have the hotel. I don't have tickets. It's crazy. But we'll be there. We'll be there, and it'll be fun.
We'll make it happen.
But yeah, please make sure to follow Molly and Star Wars Explained. We'll leave links down in the description below so you can find them if you haven't found them, even though you should, because they're wonderful. So again, thank you for joining us. Not the first, but definitely not the last time that we'll be chatting. But with that, Nani, why don't you sign us off?
Thanks again, Molly, for having this wonderful chat with us. We know that baby Grogu's going to be fine.
He will.
Even though we just started. But we are Triad of the Force. Don't worry, we haven't forgotten about the Bad Batch. We're still going to be talking about the Bad Batch as well. It's just, you know, Mandalorian season 3 premiere. Yeah. We have to talk about it fast. It happens. You can find us wherever podcasts can be found. Just search Triad of the Force and we will be there. Remember to like, subscribe, leave us a comment. And until next time, may the Force be with you.